Penguin Random House Audio presents Prisoners of the Castle, an epic story of survival and escape from Colditz, the Nazis' fortress prison. Written and read by Ben McIntyre.
In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody, but unbowed. Invictus, William Ernest Henley, 1849 to 1903. Preface. The myth of Colditz has stood unchanged and unchallenged for more than 70 years. Prisoners of war, with moustaches firmly set on stiff upper lips, defying the Nazis by tunnelling out of a grim Gothic castle on a German hilltop, fighting the war by other means. Yet, like all legends, that tale contains only a part of the truth. The soldier prisoners of Colditz were courageous, resilient, and astonishingly imaginative in the ways they tried to get out of the high-security camp holding the most troublesome captives of the Third Reich. There were more attempted escapes from Colditz than any other camp. But life in Colditz was about more than escaping, just as its inmates were more complicated and far more interesting than the cardboard saints depicted in popular culture. Colditz was a miniature replica of pre-war society, only stranger. It was a close-knit community, intensely divided over issues of class, politics, sexuality, and race. In addition to the resolute warriors, the participants in the Colditz drama included communists, scientists, homosexuals, women, aesthetes and philistines, aristocrats, spies, workers, poets, and traitors. Many of these have hitherto been excluded from history because they did not fit the traditional mould of the white, male, allied officer dedicated to escaping. Moreover, roughly half the population of Colditz was German. The guards and their officers have also tended to be painted in one uniform colour. Yet this group also contained a rich cast of characters, including some men of culture and humanity far removed from the brutal Nazi stereotype. The inside story of Colditz is a tale of the indomitable human spirit and much else besides: bullying, espionage, boredom, insanity, tragedy, and farce. Colditz Castle was a frightening prison, but it was also frequently absurd. A place of suffering, but also of high comedy. An idiosyncratic and eccentric crucible that evolved its own culture, cookery, sports, theatre, and even a distinct internal language. But this heavily guarded cage, surrounded by barbed wire and cut off from the world, changed everyone who entered it, as life inside the castle evolved and the war ground on. Some prisoners were heroic, but they were also human, tough and vulnerable, brave but terrified, by turns cheerful, determined, and despairing. This is the core of the real Colditz story: how ordinary people on both sides responded to dramatic and demanding circumstances not of their making. It asks a simple question. What would you have done? Prologue. Franz Josef. Every evening, Sergeant Major Gustav Rutenberger carried out an inspection of the castle perimeter, checking the sentries were alert at their posts and hoping to catch one napping. Rutenberger was a stickler for routine, and the last stop on his rounds was always the east side of the building, where a narrow walkway, with a sheer drop on one side and the mighty castle wall rising on the other, led to a barbed wire gate. Beyond that lay the park and the woods. Guards with machine guns were posted at intervals of 30 feet along the length of the terrace. Two more sentries guarded the gate itself, one patrolling a raised metal catwalk with a clear line of fire down the terrace. Shortly before midnight, on a warm September night in 1943, the Sergeant Major, or Stabsfeldwebel in German, appeared on the terrace as usual, accompanied by two soldiers with slung rifles. The prisoners had been locked into their quarters 2 hours earlier. Kolditz was quiet. Powerful floodlights threw the guards' distorted silhouettes against the granite face of the castle. Rotenberger cut an unmistakable figure. A native of Saxony, he had won the Iron Cross during the First World War and was said to wear his campaign medals in bed. He was feared and admired by the men under his command in No. 3 Platoon of the Guard Company. The prisoners took every opportunity to mock their captors, but treated this bristling martinet with cautious respect, as a soldier from an earlier age, battle-scarred, disciplined, and extravagantly hairy. The most distinctive thing about Rotenberger was his facial plumage, a spectacular moustache and mutton-chop combination. The old soldier was immensely proud of his huge gingery whiskers, brushing, clipping, and waxing them to points, as if grooming an exotic pet. The British POWs called him Franz Josef, after the Austro-Hungarian emperor with the handlebar moustaches, but never, ever to his face. Rotenberger marched up smartly to the first guard on the terrace and barked, "There is an attempted escape on the west side. Report to the guardhouse immediately." The startled sentry saluted, clicked his heels, and took off. The officer dismissed the second guard, and then the third. The two sentries manning the gate were surprised to see Rotenberger rounding the corner of the terrace with two replacement guards in tow. They were not due to go off duty for another 2 hours. "You're relieved early," snapped the moustachioed sergeant major. "Give me the key." Rotenberger appeared to be particularly irritable tonight, but appearances can be deceptive. A close inspection of Rotenberger's facial hair would have revealed that it was made from dismantled shaving brushes, coloured ginger grey with watercolour paints from the prison shop, and attached with glue. His uniform, like those of his escorts, was stitched with precision out of prison blankets and dyed the correct shade of German field grey. The Iron Cross on his breast was made from zinc, stripped off the castle roof and moulded into shape with a hot kitchen knife. His headgear had been fashioned out of a peaked RAF cap using felt and string. His pistol holder was cardboard, shined up with brown boot polish, from which poked a piece of wood painted to look like the butt of a 9mm Walther P-38 pistol. The two soldiers in greatcoats carried dummy rifles with wooden barrels polished with pencil lead, bolts fashioned from bits of steel bedstead, and tin triggers formed from metal cutlery. The Sergeant Major was a replica Rotenberger, a fake Franz Josef. His name was Michael Sinclair, a 25-year-old British lieutenant who had already escaped twice from Kolditz before being caught and brought back. Sinclair was fluent in German, a talented amateur actor, and an obsessive. He thought only of escaping and talked about nothing else. "I'm getting out of here," he insisted, repeatedly. This was not an expression of hope, but a statement of belief. Some of the other prisoners found his single-mindedness off-putting. There was something desperate in Sinclair's determination. For 4 months, he had studied Rotenberger's gait, posture and accent, his routine, his mannerisms, and the way he swore when angry, which was often. High above the terrace, 35 more British officers waited in the darkness. The bars on the windows of the sixth floor had already been sawn through. The men wore handmade civilian clothes. Each carried a counterfeit travel pass, forged using a typewriter of wood and wire. A photograph taken with a camera made from a cigar box and spectacles, and authorised with the official German eagle stamp carved out of a shoe heel using a razor blade. "It's going to work," someone whispered, as the first guard hurried off, it's really going to work.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?